Hello, and welcome to episode 71 of Expertise is Overrated, the podcast that takes the time to answer the questions you didn't know you didn't want the answer to. I'm Sean.
And I'm Vib, and neither of us has any clue what we're talking about.
Which is a position unlikely to change while we dive headfirst back into the Dresden Files.
This is why we need the video, rather, because I was really trying to not laugh at your entire intro. That's where I rushed mine. So yeah, welcome back.
Yeah, it's great to be back. I guess kick off with some very exciting news. If everything's worked, our first Patreon bonus episode has gone live today as of recording. So we'll have been up for about 6 weeks by the time a listener can hear this episode. But, you know, it's all the pieces seem to be working, which is great.
This really is the sort of thing we should be cutting out of our major episodes, isn't it?
Oh yeah, no, this is absolutely getting axed.
You say that.
It's not. I don't know who's editing this.
It doesn't matter who's editing this. It's not going to get edited out because we're too lazy, apparently.
Very lazy.
High production value here. No, it is very exciting. The first sort of episode we recorded for the benefit of what is currently three people.
Well, only two of them will get it because the bottom tier of patrons don't get the bonus content.
Holy shit, yeah, that's true. Oh well.
sucks to be
a Muppet.
Sucks to be a Muppet.
Gotta be at least an idiot, you know, such is life.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that miniseries is fun.
I'm enjoying it. I'm having great fun.
Winning the Iron Throne. Wit it. It's very good. But we're not talking about the Iron Throne.
You're right, we're not talking about the Iron Throne. And so we shouldn't talk about the Iron Throne. Because in other content that needs to be cut from the main cast, I think I owe you an apology.
I mean, sure, yes, of course, you do.
Because I made fun of you for a very long time for saying that the Barbie movie was good, didn't I?
You were adamant. Adamant?
I was adamant.
Why am I saying it like that?
Adamant, adamant sounds like a DC comic book hero. I was in fact adamant that that it couldn't possibly be good.
Yes, you made it clear in no uncertain tones that Barbie was not going to be a good movie. So have you finished it? Or?
Yeah, 7 out of 10 film.
7 out of 10. That's not bad.
It's for me. It's a high rank. It's a high rating. It was much better than I thought it was going to be, which I think is the most important thing for this apology.
So what about it? Did you like? What surprised you?
It was really funny.
Mm.
Like, it was actually really funny in a way that a lot of films aren't. It was self-aware without breaking the fourth wall. And yet it also did, I don't know, it was just, it was also very well put together. And it was full of, like, little details that added to the film. It was what a Marvel film used to be, I think.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's arguably a hot take, but
potentially, obviously not. But in terms of the like attention to detail and things like that, I think it might have been.
Yeah, I felt it did break the fourth wall. That's interesting. Maybe a Barbie episode coming soon.
It has a narrator, so it has a narrator who also talks to the cast. So it probably does technically break the fourth wall. That might not be quite what I meant, but
I sort of know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah,
my sort of opinion of it was it has a clear agenda, and it kind of gets there without it being too intrusive.
You see, I think that's why for me it was only 7 rather than 8 or 9 was its agenda. I liked its agenda. I thought it was very good, but I thought it sort of got just a little bit.
Yeah,
got its point across well, and then kept making the same point and hitting me over the head with it.
Yeah, maybe fair. Maybe fair.
But no,
better or worse than Oppenheimer?
Good. Worse. But Oppenheimer is a 9 out of 10 film for me.
The difference is, I think, that you might rewatch Barbie at some point. I don't see myself ever rewatching Oppenheimer.
I won't have the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or the sort of the strength of character. I'm not sure I can do it again.
No.
It's a very deep film.
I got all that I was going to get out of Oppenheimer the first time round. I suspect I would get more out of a second watch of Barbie.
Potentially, yeah. Anyway, but anyway, we're not here to talk about the Iron Throne. We're not here to talk about Barbie. And we're not here to talk about nuclear weapons. Although I suppose we are, anyway. Now that's a segue.
It's a fantastic segue. Do you want to do the honours since you got us here?
Yes, we're back in the world of Harry Dresden. So I guess that means we're back in Chicago, even though we're nowhere near Chicago. These segues are getting worse now.
I
was on a roll.
Did so well.
I flew too close to the sun.
So hard.
That's an Icarus moment there. No, so when we were deciding what to talk about in the Dresden world, it just really randomly came across a Reddit post. And we'll try to link it in the actual episode. Even though what the person actually asks is, or says is, I don't know who Cowl is, but I don't think it's future Harry. So you can find that on Reddit there. But then just randomly in the comments, someone says that Cowl is very not dead Simon Petrovich, which, that's a very interesting take. Yeah, you're a believer. Yeah. And then someone just says, Simon Petrovich is also the perfect reveal because it neither invalidates previous character activities nor represents a total no-name. It will probably happen right before or in the same book that Ebenezer gets killed. Just completely deadpan. Then everyone's like, yeah, I totally agree. Simon's betrayal is what kills Ebenezer. It's like, okay. Ebenezer's just going to die.
Which I think was where we want to come in, because it seems to be being taken as, yeah, Ebenezer has to die before the end of the series.
So someone does ask, do we know that Eb will get killed or just expect it? And it's like, part of a hero's journey is maturing past your mentors. I guess that's the sort of premise of this, right? Does Harry Dresden need to progress past his mentors, and do they need to die in order for him to achieve that?
I think those are two separate questions. Well, the way you phrased them, they are two separate questions.
Well, yes.
But Eb doesn't need to die for Harry to move past him. But that is commonly the trope in fantasy.
It's a very Harry Potter trope. Harry Potter trope?
It's a very Harry Potter trope, you're right.
It's going to be a long episode, folks.
Jesus.
maybe just count the number of fuck-ups that I make, do, say.
It's very Harry Potter. It's very Star Wars, right? Mm-hmm. The Ben Kenobi figure. And so I guess another way of looking at it is Ebenezer the Ben Kenobi of the Dresden Files?
The thing is, to me, he's just not. And I feel I guess we'll come back to this, but I feel also Jim Butcher is setting up it very differently, right? As in that he's created conflict between Harry and Eb, and I think that's the way in which Harry will overcome that particular mentorship.
You think?
Well, I don't. Yeah.
Do we want to set the stage a little bit? So, where are we in the Dresden Files now? Who is Ebenezer? Like, how does he fit into the world that Jim Butcher has built? Is that relevant, or are we just going to assume that people have listened at least to our back catalogue at this point?
I mean, you would bloody hope so. If not, go and do your homework, folks.
But 71 pages the episode's in.
But, in the spirit of civilizing the internet, I guess we need some definitions. Otherwise, we're going to be arguing about different things.
Yes!
And I guess the definition is, what is Ebenezer?
What is an Ebenezer? So he's the White Council's... The White Council of Wizardry's heavy hitter.
The White Council's black wizard, yeah.
That's certainly one way of looking at it. He's their hitman, the man who lives outside the rules, the laws.
Yes.
In some ways. He's one of the most powerful wizards on the planet, we're led to believe.
Yes.
Although I think his power has increased over the books. I don't know if that's a conscious thing on Butcher's part, but I think the Ebenezer that you see in the very, very early Dresden Files books, when he sort of takes up his position on the senior council, is not the Blackstaff McCoy that we see in, say, Battlegrounds.
No, but I think that's not necessarily just true of Eb. I think all the wizards are upscaling.
I think that's potentially true. I just think it's quite noticeable, specifically with Eb.
You just don't really see him in action early on, right? Because, he throws down a meteor onto the Count.
Casa Verde.
Very early on in the series. And that's pretty...
That's true. Heavy hitter magic. He does. I don't know. It's a thought that's been mulling in the back of my head. I don't know that there's really any substance to it, but just this idea that we don't get the sense from the early books that Ebenezer is as big a deal as Harry makes him out to be in the later books. But I don't know whether that's actually because Harry is getting closer to the center as the books progress. So he's getting to see more of what other people think of Ebenezer rather than anything else. I don't know. It was just a...
Yeah, I mean, because Ebenezer also takes up a seat on the senior council, right? And I think...
Well, he sort of muscles his way onto the senior council.
But I think it'd be very sort of befitting... this canon that when you do that your power just sort of increases, because it's all about, you know, wisdom and preparedness, and I feel like being a senior council member somehow just amplifies that.
You get access to more knowledge or what have you.
Yeah, exactly. Plus, you know, I'm sure a late night chat with Arthur Langtree doesn't, you know, it's not going to do you any harm, is it?
Well, he's held up as, or he's not, I'm not sure held up is the right word, he sort of positions himself as in opposition to Arthur Langtree, the Merlin, the leader of the White Council. I don't know how much I buy that either.
Him
actually being in opposition to Langtree. Mm. I think, especially now that they're both on the senior council, I think they probably are much closer allies than they appear in public. It'd be very wizardy to have a sort of, you know, the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove type approach, where actually they're both working towards the same ends and working with each other.
See, I'm not getting as much of an antagonistic relationship as you are, I think. Like, politically, they have different views, and they clearly express them honestly to each other, but I always feel, especially in the later books where we're seeing Ebb is just a real pragmatist in quite a lot of ways. And I think the few interactions we have with Arthur Langtree, it's kind of similar, right? They're looking out for preserving wizard kind.
I think that's almost my point. Like, whatever political opposition they might have to one another, or even personal opposition they might have to one another, They're both driven so much by the same goals that they can very easily overcome that opposition.
Yeah,
but and then, work together. But that might be from a position of pragmatism. You're right.
Because I mean, the main occasions in which we really see them being at odds with each other is mostly because of, you know, when Harry's in the middle of it. Because Langtree wants him gone, and Ebb's like, "Well, he's my grandson." He doesn't say that, but you know, that is the motivation. Those are times where I think, they're against each other.
But there is also, I think we've discussed previously, I'm not sure if we've done it on the podcast, but we've discussed previously how useful is Harry Dresden to Arthur Langtree?
Yes.
So.
I think we decided very, right? But not necessarily on the White Council.
Yeah, but the point is, how much of Arthur Langtree's trying to get rid of Harry, for want of a better word, isn't actually about Harry so much as it's about the rest of the White Council.
Oh, yeah. I see what you mean.
So it's all my point with Langtree a lot. I think I have this sort of built-up idea of Langtree in my head that probably isn't borne out in the books. But I think it's all smoke and mirrors and all plans within plans. Or, no, it's not smoke and mirrors. He's clearly a very effective and very powerful wizard. But, like, his real skill is in his political brain and in his ability to essentially manipulate everyone around him.
I don't disagree with that at all. And I think you're right. Maybe their disagreement is over how they reach the same end goal, which is to preserve the council and preserve wizard kind.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Langtree sees it as being easier with Harry on the outside. Whereas I think Ebb is sort of thinking, well, if Harry's on the outside, he's going to be in much more trouble. And that's something he's not a big fan of.
Mm. But, yeah. No, that's fair. I think that's probably right. I don't know. I have this image in my head of Langtree and Ebb sort of, as you said, sort of sitting late at night, each with a, you know, Langtry with a brandy, Ebb with a whiskey, planning how they deal with the fact that there are separatist elements within the council, and how do they use the fact that they've got people on the council like Harry who are going to push against the council's laws when they see those laws as getting in the way, and the pair of them working together to formulate strategies such that, you know, Langtry pushes in one direction, Ebb pushes against that in a different direction, and actually you end up in a situation where Harry Dresden destroys the Red Court.
Yeah. The one thing I don't really understand is allegiances, right? Because, I mean, Ebb forms the Grey Council.
Yeah, but I'm 99% certain Langtry is at least aware of the Grey Council. He's probably not a member, but Ebb probably says to him, I'm going to go and do this, just FYI.
See, no, that I don't think so. I think there is an element of mistrust with Ebb and Langtry. I think Ebb's not entirely sure that... I don't think Ebb can entirely discount the fact that Langtry might be on the Black Council or might sort of be opposed, because I think Langtry's nature seems to me such that he's just so secretive, as you say, sort of plans within plans within plans. And because he hasn't, like, fully explained that picture to Ebb, I feel that could be a source of mistrust.
I think that's fair. I think there's definitely a situation in which Langtry's downfall is orchestrated because he has too many plans, and sort of the plans only work because he's constantly spinning all of the plates. But the moment one of those plates starts spinning, the whole thing comes crumbling down.
Oh, I don't know. I feel like he'd build in redundancy somehow. But it's an interesting thought. Like, does Langtry need to die in order for Harry to step up to the plate?
Well, I guess we need to question, what does stepping up to the plate look like? How many
bodies are they going to need to be? Yeah, that's not a bad place to start. So we've not defined what Ebb is, even though we said we would. We've instead talked about...
Well, he's Harry Dresden's mentor figure, fundamentally. That's who we're talking about.
Yeah, one of. I guess the main one.
He's the main mentor. He's the person whose personal philosophy has influenced a lot of Harry.
Ah, but this is the problem, right? Because Justin, his original mentor, did him very, very wrong. It's hard to overstate how wrong it was. And then Ebb stepped in, gave him a whole new philosophy, and then, by virtue of being the Black Staff and the actions that Harry has seen Ebb perform, has undermined a lot of that. And I think that's the thing that Harry's going to have to work on, squaring that role that Ed played in his life.
Yeah.
That philosophy, and actually getting over what Ed originally taught him.
He's also Harry's grandfather.
Yes, and so Maggie's great-grandfather.
Maggie's great-grandfather. And he sort of occupies something of a father role to Harry at times in the book as well. Sort of a cross between a father, a grandfather, and an uncle. Sort of a male familial relation of some sort. I got very lost there.
Nice.
abort.
Take two, so, go on.
Please don't.
Ebb is Harry's grandfather. Move on.
he's also Harry's grandfather. And as you said, he's Maggie's great-grandfather. He's a figure of great respect in the supernatural community. He carries Mother Winter's walking stick, which is also some sort of symbol of office.
Finish your thought, but then we'll come back to something. Unless you are finished.
No, I'm just layering titles upon titles. He's a big fucking deal. And as we said earlier, he's probably one of, if not the single heaviest hitters on the White Council in terms of raw ability to throw down.
Yes. But so, yes, absolutely. But I think this is why maybe I sometimes struggle with the concept of he's well-respected in the supernatural community. Yeah. Because I'm not convinced he is.
Okay.
There's something about the way that it's always written, right? When Ebb, usually in the presence of Harry, obviously, encounters a supernatural being, there's always some element of, like, they'll make a point of calling him Black Staff and things like that. And I guess that's maybe what the supernatural dudes do. But there's a feel to me, there's always this, like, slight undertone of, not like sneering, but like, oh, you're only what you are because of your office. I don't know if I'm completely misreading that, but I feel that's, I sometimes get that vibe that they're like, it's not Ebenezer McCoy that they're respecting, it's the Black Staff.
Perhaps. That's not my read of those interactions. I mean, obviously you've got, who does he interact with? So we've got Kincaid, who's the first one who introduces us to the idea of the Black Staff.
Yeah, and that's less respect, just outright dislike.
Dislike, they just clearly worked together, don't like each other. But other than that, Odin seems to respect him.
Yeah, but Odin respects everybody. It seems to be just Odin's deal.
Odin's shtick is actually just being an absolutely stand-up bloke.
Yeah, he's just really nice guy. That's why he hands out presents every Christmas.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, I mean, I think,
Matt, we must see an interaction between... We do see an interaction between Ebenezer and Mab.
We do.
I think in Peace Talks or around there. Peace Talks Battleground.
But I feel that's probably type. Coloured more by the tension around the familial connection between Eben
and Harry.
Maybe I'm just reading into it, because I feel like Peace Talks, for example, you obviously have Martha Liberty and Listens Christos. To Wind and what's his face? Oh, Greek guy.
Christos.
You know, and I feel like they're the diplomats, right? That's who the White Council has actually sent to the peace talks. And then there's also Ebb. It's a bit unclear what he's sort of doing.
He's the
head of security.
He's the mailed fist inside the velvet glove, though. You send Ebb to your peace talks to remind everyone what happens if you don't come to the table. You find the Black Staff waiting for you.
Yeah, like
he's the threat that the White Council can roll out openly.
But if that's the case, then there is something to be said for Ebb needing to go, right? In order for Harry to step up to the plate. And I know we still haven't defined what that looks like. But if you're saying that what keeps a lot of the nasties at bay is the threat of Ebenezer McCoy, the Black Staff.
I don't think it's just that. But he's the physical representation of the wrath of the White Council, basically. It's the, he's the full threat of the Council condensed into a single individual.
Mm.
My question is he that before he's on the Senior Council?
Well, I mean, this is the other sort of thing, right?
This is what I find so strange about Ebb.
Yeah, because, I mean, before... Well, I guess we don't know before, but as in... Whenever we meet characters who've known Ebb for a long time... And this is the same sort of thing, as in they refer to him as the Black Staff, which is sort of honouring that office. It's not, oh, Senior Councilman McCoy. It's Black Staff. Those are not the same thing, right? I feel like he's not...
It's a title,
he's not,
same as Ancient.
Yeah, but like, I feel like he's not being sort of put on an equivalent level as some of the other Senior Councilmen.
But people don't refer to Rashid as Senior Councilman Rashid. They refer to him as the Gatekeeper. So I think it's that. I think it's a title.
Yeah,
the title almost supersedes.
But that is a title that you can only hold when you're on the Senior Council? Have I just made that
Do
up?
Do we know that?
Have I just made that Do up? I'm going to stick with it. That's a title you can only have when you're on the Senior Council. There you go.
I think you've made that up.
But you can't
disprove
it. I don't
think there's any... I cannot prove a negative.
Whereas we know that Ebb was the Black Staff before he was on the Senior Council.
So this is my point. We know Ebb was on the Senior Council, was the Black Staff before he was on the Senior Council. We know he was Captain of Wardens, potentially at the same time as being the Black Staff, but certainly prior to being on the senior counsel as well. So if we accept that he is essentially the raw distillation of the threat of the White Council, which is a position I don't intend to climb down from, then my question is, prior to his ascension to the senior counsel, was he still used in the way that he's used in peace talks? Is he still the hidden threat? Or is there another person? Is it Simon? Which I think is why the Cowell is Simon theory holds water, because he's essentially the old Ebb, albeit perhaps not the Blackstaff.
So it reminded me that one of the great comments in that Reddit thread was, there's no way Jim Butcher passes up the idea of, you know, or is it the pun that is Simon Cowell?
Well, also that, yes. But also the idea of a sort of hooded evil wizard with a Russian accent? Come on.
Yeah. But so my issue with your premise to an extent is why... Who are they trying to impress with this, right? Who are they need these Everyone. Secret threats? You know, but like... The supernatural world is very connected, right? They know that Ebb exists. They know that mm-hmm. Simon exists. If Simon's alive, I'm sure that there are people within the various powerful realms of the supernatural who know that he's still alive. So I'm not sure what that sort of cloak and dagger is meant to achieve. Like, the White Council, I think, is always meant to be portraying a very open bulwark of human defense, right? Like, don't fuck with us, we'll fuck with you.
We are what stands between you and humanity. Don't fucking come at us, because we will end you.
Yeah, and I think a lot of their power stems from that openness, like, more so than most others, I think. I suppose the Fae courts, because, I mean, they represent some sense of order and balance in the world.
Yeah. I don't quite know what you mean, though.
Well, as in sort of trying to outline what you're saying is that this threat of the Blackstaff or something else. I think the threat is the Blackstaff, right? And that's why he's at the peace talks. It's as you say.
You don't... Here's a thought, though. Any of the wardens... The Blackstaff is special because they don't have to follow the laws of magic.
Mm-hmm.
Bluntly. But a lot of the laws of magic don't protect the Fae, for example.
And the laws of magic only apply to wizards.
So the whole point is Ebenezer can kill humans.
Yes.
So why... I'm not attacking
my own. It's not the whole point, but it's
not the whole point. The broader point is he can just do whatever the hell he wants. Ish. But, like, what... I'm almost asking your question back at you. What does the Blackstaff get you in a room full of supernatural entities?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think the answer is on its own. The Blackstaff doesn't get you anything. It's the man that holds it that matters.
But again, maybe
supernatural world refer to him as Blackstaff.
But again, maybe I'm just trying to make my own theory work about the whole sneering element. Maybe they just keep referring to him because it's not something that impresses them at all. Because it doesn't matter.
I don't think that's right. I don't think people sneer at Ebenezer McCoy. I just don't. I don't think that happens. This is a man who storms through the Svartalf embassy to prove the point that a wizard of the senior council walks where he chooses. Like, you don't sneer at that man because he'll turn you into paste.
I mean, they told him
and
to
suffer
leave.
No consequence.
They were angry that he did it, and he told them to leave. Wasn't it Harry who convinced them to, like, leave him?
No, I don't think so.
Because, yeah, he's like, I'm a senior councilman of the White Council, like, I do what I want, and they're like,
One of the Svartalf says, is this man your guest? And Harry says, I suppose so. That probably makes everything simpler. But there's no suggestion at all that, from Ebb at least, that he's not wholly in control and happy with the situation as it's panning out.
But equally, there's no... the suggestion is very much that the Swartals are very willing to try to evict him.
Yes, and I think Eb's point would be, yeah, try.
Yeah, but the point is about the respect or the fear that the Black Star is meant to instill, right? And the Svardals are like, we don't really care. Well, you know.
No, they let him get to Harry's door. Like, I think they are reluctant to throw down with him because they let him get to Harry's door. Like, there is absolutely no suggestion that Harry could do that. And Harry lives there. If you think about the security checks that Harry has to go through at the start of peace talks to get to his own door. Yeah, but
you forget that Harry's absolutely shit at a veil.
I don't think that's relevant.
Might be. But, I mean, we're getting sidetracked, I think. In this sense.
Like, we are getting sidetracked.
Ebenezer McCoy's power levels. I'm not going to deny that he's a powerful wizard, don't get me wrong. But I don't think
it's a sneer when people call him the Black Staff.
Yeah,
I think it's wrapped up in the supernatural proclivity to name and categorize things and to refer to people by their titles.
That's maybe
and things
true.
Like that.
That's maybe true. Look, I think that's what's. I was trying to make it work. I'm not entirely sure it works. I'll have a think about it and maybe next time I'll make it work. But
bring it back to the group. We'll workshop it.
Yeah, workshop it. But the point still stands that Eb is probably very important, but none of that really has anything to do with the mentorship role that he plays for Harry, right? So
other than being an example of a way that a wizard can use their power, I suppose. I don't know, there's nothing more to add to it than that, I think.
Yeah, but I feel Eb tries to often make the point to Harry, it's like, you know, there's more solutions to just, you know, hitting the nail with the hammer, you know.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I think the problem is that's a lesson that Harry hasn't learned yet.
Yeah. Yeah, but
so
but I suppose one way to phrase the question is, right, if we're talking about Harry Dresden stepping up to the plate, we're probably imagining a scenario where the White Council is compromised, i.e. that is to say humanity is under threat and there's not enough bodies to help out. Yeah.
We're talking about some sort of apocalypse scenario where Harry has to do more than just be the MacGuffin at the end.
Yeah.
Which is what he was for Ethnew.
So how important do we think Eb is in that structure?
I think in any situation in any apocalypse situation, such like Chicago for Ethnew, if Ebenezer is there, Harry plays second fiddle to Ebenezer. I think he just does.
Does he in Battlegrounds? Does he actually? You would say that with a hand on heart?
I think he does. He doesn't assume a leadership role.
He literally has an army following him. Like Chicagoans.
Not at the start, though. If you think about them at the top of Marcone's castle, he's there. But he's not calling the shots. I think that's my point.
He isn't. Like, Odin's calling the shots, ultimately, and Mab. And then Harry
Odin
decides to rescue two randomers.
Odin and Mab and the Huntsman and Ebenezer are the ones doing the planning. Aren't they? And then Harry is also there.
What does Eb do? Eb is there. But so is Christos and Listens to Wind and Martha Liberty, no?
Martha Liberty is gathering information, as I think is Listens to Wind. I can't remember what Christos is doing, but Ebenezer is part of that council of war.
But ultimately, Harry at that point is there as in the capacity of a warden, right? So that makes sense that he's not.
Well, isn't he there? Isn't he there as Mab's knight?
Both, right?
Well, maybe both.
But I think the point is the very. Once the battle really gets going, I think Harry calls his own shots. Not only that, he calls some pretty major shots.
He also gets separated from Eb.
Yeah,
because I'm going to maintain while he's with Eb in the battle, he takes orders from Eb. They all do. Eb leads the wardens.
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, yeah, that's true.
And I think that's sort of the hole that Harry needs to grow to fill. Is that Harry?
Yeah.
He he like is has leadership thrust upon him by the end, whereas Ebb assumes it. He is the leader in that situation. I think that's what Harry needs to.
But do you not think? But I don't think you need to get rid of Ebb for that. I think what you need to do is get rid of Harry from the council, which they did do. So now,
but I think this is where I'm coming back to, any apocalypse situation in which Harry and Ebb are both alive, unless they probably kick, like Harry probably goes to hell with the council, I'll work with Ebb.
And Ebb
probably goes, yeah, we'll deal with the fact that you've been kicked out of the council later. There's a war on.
I see your point, though. I think, sort of to get a bit technical, if you're going to write a book and your hero and Ebb are in the same place, then yeah, I mean, it's quite natural that you would defer to the more senior battle-hardened wizard, right?
This is the thing. He led the wardens. He's like 400 years old. He's fought in wars.
But do we think leadership, like that kind of thing that you're describing, is the thing that's required to be the hero in this story?
I don't know where we end up, though. That's the problem. I don't know what Harry's endgame is. I think that's like the big thing that's missing from Harry's arsenal, is his ability to... It's not his ability to pull people together, because he can do that on an individual level. If you look at like the Paranet or...
Mm-hmm.
What have you, but his ability to build structures, alliances, something like that, to delegate as well, to allow people to be...
But I feel like that's all we've ever seen Harry doing, right? That's sort of what sets him apart from all the other wizards that we've seen.
Does he?
Yeah, because he has no qualms about making a deal with the White Court of Vampires, for example. You know, he works with werewolves. He hires shapeshifters. He does all sorts of, like... He's so naturally at ease with everybody, which is very unwizard-like, right? Because the wizards in this universe are like, no, we do it our way, and we don't go to the White Court of Vampires. Are you crazy?
That is true. I feel like, basically, what Harry's missing is his ability to use his words. And I'm sort of...
Yes.
Struggling to put that more coherently than just saying he's bad at using his words.
Ironically, isn't
it? But that it's not as easy as we make it sound. But that sort of is the biggest thing missing from his toolkit.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
But I don't know that you need Ebb not be there for him to do that.
I don't think you do. And I'm also sort of retconning my statement about if Ebb and Harry are in the same place, Ebb is always going to be going to be the one in charge, because there is the Starborn element to consider, right? And Ebb, as I've said before, I think is fundamentally a pragmatist. So if the victory depends on, you know, Harry being the leader, then I think that will happen. That's terribly put, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, it would be a very odd state of affairs where you can only win if Harry Dresden's in charge, but I see what you mean.
But as you know, yeah, because he is the Starborn, you know, the stars and stones, mm-hmm. all these sort of things I'm sure will be important and explained in great detail at some point. And I don't think that Ebb would get in the, you know, I don't think he would be the obstacle to that.
No, I don't think he would. I think that's true. I mean, we see it with the Corner Hounds. Right, Ebb is perfectly happy to say to Harry, you need to be the one to do this. I'm going to tell you how to do it, but you need to be the one to do it.
Yeah, I'm just going to
give you the tools and I'll give you the tools and you do the difficult bit. Well, not the difficult bit, but you know what I mean. You do the bit that I can't. So
even given Ebb's narrative role in all this, right, the sort of mentorship figure, the father figure, as you say, that you're trying to, you know, you are trying to sort of prove your worth to your father in many ways, and there's that conflict, I guess, with Harry's brother and so on. But does Ebb need to die? I feel like the answer to that question is no.
I don't know, because he's so much a Ben Kenobi figure. And that, I guess that is the question. Does your mentor need to die,
see, but,
or can you surpass them in other ways?
But he's... He's Ben Kenobi, but a Ben Kenobi who... whose philosophy he's undermined himself, right?
Ask a different question. Do we think that Harry needs to surpass Ebb in order for the overall narrative to be a satisfying story?
Depends what you mean by surpass.
It does sort of does, doesn't it?
I think the what's interesting in this relationship, more than a sort of Ben Kenobi style thing, is that they fundamentally have very different worldviews, right? As in, Ebb is a pragmatist and is like, no, these are the things we need to do. If 1,000 people die to save 1,000,000, that's a win. Whereas Harry's like, no, save everybody.
Do we think Ebb thinks? He does think that, doesn't he? Does, he does wants think to that. Leave the people.
Yeah. Ebb is me, you're Harry. He wants
to
leave Harry.
The people in Chicago to die. I'll take that. I'll be your
head. So that's proof that Harry will never surpass Ebb. Anyway. But that's the thing. In the Battle of Chicago, he's like, you know, obviously you save as many as you can, but equally, if I need to sacrifice 1,000 to save 1,000,000, yeah, that's the sort of Ebb equation we that Ebb would do.
Ebb says you have to stay back until the very end.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can't go down Harry, to save those people, even though...
You can't go down to save... We won't go down to save those people because it's not a risk worth taking. And Harry goes...
Fuck you, no, yes.
I'm going to go and save those people.
Every life is worth saving, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I don't really, think you need... I don't
really
think
am the Harry Dresden of this podcast. Really, I like this.
You really are. I'm the Albus Dumbledore. Yeah, that's right. I don't think Harry needs to... I think in some ways, narratively, he has surpassed Ebb, right? Because that is the hero figure we all meant mm-hmm. to aspire to, right? Every life matters.
Ebb, yeah.
So Harry's already...
Have you just turned this into an All Lives Matter podcast?
But then saying that I'm not to that guy.
You try... So have I turned this into an All Lives Matter podcast?
No, I have sort of done it, but maybe to my detriment. I don't know. It's hard to say. Look, in real life, all lives do matter unless there's some serious maths involved.
Damn it. We were so close to a breakthrough. So close. Sorry.
So surpassing, I don't know.
Do you make the case rather, because I don't think Harry needs to become magically more powerful than Ebenezer. I don't think
there's
that's
not enough time.
What we mean. No, there just isn't. Ebenezer's got 400 years of experience.
But then Harry's the Winter Knight and probably some other random shit.
Yeah, sure. Harry can punch Ebenezer's head off if he tries hard enough.
Yeah, but he's like the Winter Knight with soul fire and all sorts of extra stuff, right? He's also probably going to carry a sword of destiny or whatever. No, not
are those not bolt-ons to cover up the fact that he's only 45 or whatever?
Yes, but equally Harry, in his own words, to be fair, always does say that he is one of the heaviest hitters on the council as well.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. he's an apparition of Harry slugs 10. It out with Ebb fairly, you know, he holds his own pretty admirably.
Right up until he gets a small nuclear missile through his heart.
Yeah, but that's because he's ages away.
Is it?
And he's literally on a body of water. It's impressive enough.
Yes, it's an impressive piece of magic. It's an impressive piece of magic that Molly does.
Ironically, I think if Harry were to listen to some of Ebb's advice, his power level would spike a lot.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I think, that's almost what I mean by, you know, the soul fire, the Winter Knight ism. They're bolt-ons to cover up the fact that, in wizarding terms, Harry is very young and very inexperienced.
Yeah, but then you've given Ebb the black staff, like, you know, talk about crutches.
We don't know. The black staff doesn't... Well, I have questions about the black staff that I really want Jim to answer, but I don't think the black staff makes Ebenezer stronger.
Yeah, it just means he can cast... Yeah.
It just means he can cast Avada Kedavra constantly without repercussions. Basically.
Yeah, but it sort of depends on how that manifests, right? Does it... Yeah, that's a different debate.
But then there's the question of in Changes where he sort of points the black staff at half a dozen people and they all die. Is that him or is that the staff?
Exactly. So there's questions there that need
there
answering.
There absolutely are. But we see he doesn't use the black staff in the fight with Harry, for example. He doesn't use the black staff in the fight with the Corner Hounds. He's using his own raw power there. And his own raw power and raw skill is able to manifest a shield that has that is more complicated than any magic that Harry can do.
You see, he's not using the black staff, like, he still has it, right? As in, it's still his staff.
It's still his possession, but he's got two staffs, doesn't he?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember which one he's using in those fights.
He's using a different one, I'm sure.
I feel like he is, right? He's using his own like old one.
He's using his lightning struck tree staff.
Yeah, I think I'm sure he is. That's right. Because ultimately, these things are foci, right? So there's probably an argument to be made for the black staff being a particularly powerful one, potentially.
I think it's a particularly powerful focus for specific types of magic. To the extent that it almost is doing the magic itself, but not quite.
There's also a piece there on the fact that Ed doesn't want to carry that all the time.
There is,
and
the corruption that runs up his arm when he seems to use it, and things like that. There's so much wrapped up in the black staff.
But anyway, it seems like we're in agreement that Ebb does not need to die in order for Harry to be the ultimate hero of the story.
I don't think he does, but I think it's a weird story if he doesn't. If that makes sense,
you would like to see Ebb die. It's a bit strongly worded, but I think it will happen. To bring about the Kenobi storyline.
I think it's a much easier story to write if Ebenezer dies in it, if that makes sense.
I think that's right. I mean, ultimately, you don't want many bodies at the end, right?
No, you don't.
Live bodies, in this case.
It's a very easy way to showcase how dangerous someone is. If Ebenezer's killed by Dracul, for example, or by Cowl, then that instantly shows us that this is one of the most dangerous people we've seen, because even Ethne doesn't kill Ebb. Now, granted, she doesn't appear to try very hard, but, you know,
Cal killing Ebb is not a bad shout. Cal being Ebb could also be a thing.
Isn't Cal really tall?
I mean, wizards that are veils.
Yeah, true.
I mean, that's a cop-out argument, because I'm sure that would be kind of douchebag writing.
Cowl being Ebb, I don't like as a theory. I just don't. There's too many things that Cowl does that doesn't make sense. But I also think that there's something weird about Ebb in Peace Talks and Battlegrounds.
You've made that point before, and I think that's also worth discussing at some point. But no, the thought I just had was when you're saying, you know, someone needs to kill Ebb, I was like, it could be the White Court. That would be a sort of prosaically neat way of doing it.
What, like Lara?
Yeah.
Or Rogue Thomas. Elements. Or Thomas.
Because Thomas is not in his right mind, ultimately. There could be some sort of redemption-y thing for Ebb, where, you know, he does sort of acknowledge Thomas's lineage, and then there's some sacrifice-y stuff going on.
Yeah, I could absolutely see Ebb dying to save Thomas. That makes a huge amount of narrative sense for all of those characters.
It would, right? Mm-hmm. It also would happen on the island, which, you know, seems apocalyptic enough.
Yeah.
You can almost envision the scenario where if the right things happen, the black staff could cease to exist, in a way.
I wonder if the black staff just goes back to Mother Winter.
Or returns to Mother Winter.
Harry returns the black staff to Mother Winter, because actually it turns out that you need death for what's coming, and you need death to be able to leave her cottage.
Also works, right? Because he's a servant of the White Court at the moment.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, yeah. There's so many balancing points here.
So what if somehow, and I don't know how you get there, Ebb uses his death curse to save Thomas?
Ooh.
I don't know how you get there, but I could see that.
Yeah, what kills Ebb?
What kills Ebb? Ebb kills Ebb. He uses his... I don't know whether it's to cast a protection spell over Thomas, because he sees Thomas defending Maggie and they're about to be overwhelmed, and he can't get there. So the only thing that he can do is to cast a death curse to protect Thomas and Maggie, and he does it to protect Thomas because he can see that Thomas is going to give his life for Maggie, and it's not going to be enough. Ish. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't hate it. What's missing from that, I think...
a little bit do.
It's because you're such a grouch most of the time. What I feel... as you said before, I think Harry Dresden's main problem is that he doesn't use his words nearly often enough. Because mm-hmm. when he does, I think he's actually quite good with that. I feel like if Ebb were to die... because Ebb is also not good with his words, but I think that interaction needs to be what catalyzes Harry's realization that words are the thing he needs to use.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. You know, I think that would narratively fit, as in the last lesson that Ebb teaches Harry is, you know, actually sometimes
it's nothing
just
to do
your
with
fucking
magic.
Words, you know, yeah. Like be a human, ultimately.
Be a human. That is the lesson. We're still human. At the end of the day, no matter what we do, no matter what happens to us,
and it could
we're
be
more
Thomas...
like them than we are them.
Yeah, exactly. And it could be, I think it could be Thomas Wraith who sort of sets that whole thing in motion where Ebb's like, oh my God, he's actually more human than the two of us.
Yes, because Thomas is exhibiting love by protecting... I'm on this Thomas is protecting Maggie train because I think that's the only thing that can move the needle for McCoy at the moment.
Yeah.
Thomas clearly in a position where he's sacrificing himself for no personal gain to save Maggie, which is an act of unconditional love that a White Court vampire shouldn't be capable of by Ebb's understanding of the world.
This is really good. Jim, if you're listening, we've just written it for you. You can turn that 48% into 100%.
I don't know what the threat is. I don't know how you actually get to a position where that's what you need to do.
No, especially given Thomas's current state.
But Thomas's state could almost feed into it. I don't know, but that's how I see you take McCoy off the table and you make you give his arc the resolution that it needs, and his death means something other than just, oh no, isn't Dracul actually really, really scary?
Yeah, because I mean, maybe we haven't seen everything yet, but I feel like that we've seen enough to know there's a lot of really scary shit out there. Like, I don't need to be more scared of stuff, you know?
I don't need to be convinced that someone that scares McCoy is actually scary.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, I think we've seen Ethne, we saw what Ethne can do. We know Pharaoh is probably about as scary as Ethne. We know Dracul is probably in a similar league. Like, we don't need to be convinced of the threat that these characters pose.
Yeah.
So just, I don't like the term warfing, but just warfing Ebenezer doesn't really do it for me.
No, I agree with that.
But that said, I mean, you could warf him and it would be a very effective use of him. But it just feels like his arc would end unresolved. And also, I don't know that Harry can have another death on his conscience. Whereas if Ebenezer death curses, then that doesn't necessarily go on Harry's conscience in the same way.
Yeah.
He can say to Harry, you know, this is my choice. I know what I'm doing. This is nothing to do with you. This is me. I was wrong about them. I was wrong about everything. I've been wrong all my life. Let this be my last act type thing. I don't know. Not that ham-fisted writing.
That or it's the precise opposite, right? Because ultimately the thing that sparked the fight, the thing that sparked the fight in the Svartalf embassy was, Harry, what are you doing with your daughter here? You should send her to safety. You're a fucking moron. And I could easily see Ebb dying in defense of Maggie, reinforcing his point to Harry that he was a moron.
With his last words being,
I fucking told you, you moron.
That'd be amazing.
It'd be a very Ebb way to go, sort of just like cussing.
God damn it!
Not that he cusses much, but sort of just angrily going into death, like, oh, fucking, fucking douche.
Just shouting horses.
So yeah, it could go either way, but I guess so scenarios for both.
Either works, or not.
Either does work. But so let's say then, for argument's sake, that Ebb doesn't need to die. What does need to happen for Harry to become who we think Harry needs to become? It's a very big question, actually, isn't it?
That's a huge question with 4 minutes left.
Well, go on then.
What needs to happen for Harry to become who? He needs to become. Harry needs. I don't know where I think Harry needs to end up.
I'm a big fan of the.
I'm a big fan of the Harry ends up as some sort of supernatural entity, basically. I don't quite know how. Some sort of ascendant.
You've been reading Black Library, mate.
Probably. But if you go back to the very first words of the very first book, my name is Harry Blackstone Copperfield Dresden, conjure by it at your peril. I like that gets rolled out as evidence that actually the whole series is written from the perspective of Harry as a summonable immortal, basically. So like, don't say my name because I might just appear and you don't want that.
Yeah, you've made that sort of case before. It's goes against the whole, humans are strong vibe.
But humans are strong because they can make choices. So the way you get there is by making Harry make a choice to give up his own humanity to save humanity.
My problem with that now is that is the storyline of a particular character in Baldur's Gate 3, or one of the potential storylines of a character in Baldur's Gate 3.
I know.
So maybe that's when Jim Butcher sat there and like, oh, you fucking bastards.
You twats, Larian. Why couldn't you just make this game about bear sacks, you dicks?
You took the one wizard and you gave him this. Oh, God. So, you know, there is that.
I think, that is a problem. I think someone at Larian just likes Dresden Files and was like, I'll write the end myself. But I could see that being Harry's resolution. So he ends up giving his life, or giving his humanity to rebuild the Outer Gates or something like that. But in order to maintain them, he has to continue essentially like an Atlas figure, holding them shut forever type thing.
I just don't know how satisfying I'd find that. Like, I don't hate it. The issue is at the very end, then who do we look to sort of convey that message of that's what Harry's done? If you know what
just
I mean.
Just Harry. Like
his own,
just Harry.
I just don't see how that works in a pleasing way.
You close the books with the same line that you opened them with. My name is conjure by it at your peril. And then that's it. That's your those bookend your entire series. I don't think that's where we'll end up, but I can see how you get there. The alternative
is, how do you
get
there though? How does one do that in the Harry Dresden universe? Ascend to godhood, essentially.
The Dark Hallow,
yeah.
You Dark Hallow Demon Reach. As the Warden. Is how you get there.
But to what extent? I don't
I mean,
know.
It would be bad. I don't know. I don't really think that that's it. Maybe the Grail. Maybe Nicodemus's Grail. Fuse all the artifacts together. But I think almost we'd be better off having this conversation after the first two books of the Big Apocalypse trilogy.
Okay, so in 20 years' time, we'll reconvene.
When we're both, oh God, well into our 50s.
Yes. I mean, you didn't have to say it like that, but yes. I mean, there's just no need for that.
Yeah, there's no need for that kind of language. I'd like to apologize.
It's the second time in one episode, folks. I'm not sure we're going to get that again for 20 years. So,
no, it's true. That's a win. It's never happening again.
That's a win. Maybe Barbie 2 will be out. And you'll be apologizing for how good that was.
I'll be apologizing for claiming that was going to be good.
I don't hate your theory. I think we can discuss that in an episode. You know, we think about maybe what the outsiders are. I had a really good idea about that.
Yeah, I think this. Oh, you've got an interesting idea about that I quite like.
No, I hate it now. Better. I'm off. I've gone off it.
I don't like it that much, but I think it's better than just it's Cthulhu, which seems to be sort of the generally accepted theory.
Yeah, but that's just lame.
It's just rubbish. I don't like that. So.
Yeah,
I think
nature of the outsiders and how Harry's
endgame in the context of the nature of the outsiders, I think, is a really, really good point.
Yeah, exactly. Coming soon, in like a couple of months.
I've got no idea. Well, it's on our to-do list.
It is. I feel like we haven't talked Dresden in a while. It's been refreshing.
No, we haven't. I'm glad we've come back to it.
But yeah, Jim Butcher, excited. Please.
I'm excited for 12 months. It is, according to Jim Butcher's website, 48% complete.
Yeah, but given the Battleground came out in 2020.
No.
You know.
It's not been 4 years.
It has been 4 years.
Well, no, three and a half years.
A whole pandemic.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's really upsetting. I'm going to need to reread the whole series now.
That was sort of my thought when I saw that as well. Well, good. So we don't need to kill Eb necessarily. I mean, I'm sure we will, but we don't need to.
I think he will die. I think there are other ways of doing it, but I don't see them. Like, I think there's so much harder to do, and I think you can use his death effectively.
Outside odds on Harry killing Eb himself?
No, I don't see that at all. That's
take the
not
black
the story
by force.
That's not the story that Jim Butcher is telling.
No,
I don't think.
I agree.
There's a redemption possibility for Ebenezer, I think.
Yeah, I think the various scenarios that we described are actually quite good. I mean, I would say that.
I like them.
Well, let's end it there, I think.
Yep.
Unless you have anything wise to say, it's unlikely.
I don't. I've given all my wisdom for the evening.
All your wisdom for the evening is gone. In which case, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Expertise is Overrated. No doubt we've said some things that were either objectively wrong or downright offensive. As ever, feel free to let us know, rate the podcast wherever you can, check out our Patreon for bonus content, and come chat to us on our Discord.
If you're lucky, we might just argue with you in one of our upcoming episodes. And if you're really lucky, we might call you an idiot. Come back next time for some more absolute nonsense.